Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's how we own it. What's up, family? It's your girl, Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your host of Street Politicians, the place where the streets and politics meet. What's going on, Mr. Lennon?
You know me, I'm blessed and highly favored. Shout out to Actively Black, because I've been minding my black business. They sent me, this is some fire. They got some fire.
I told them I was gonna buy some stuff from them. I need to sit down and
the quality on these sweatsuits.
It's high quality.
And these hats is crazy. They got the leather, you know, some leopard skin going on. Nice. Good quality.
It does look nice. It does look nice. I need to, I told them I was going to purchase some things from them and I will, but I'm actually in my, for whatever reason, the last several years, especially since Minister Farrakhan led the boycott during Black Friday several years ago when the police brutality incidents were very visible, because I'm not going to say that they've calmed down. We know that's not the case because we're seeing cases pop up around the country every single day. But during that time, there was redistribute the pain, and it was the boycott, of any of the holiday shopping. I never really went back. I get a few things for different individuals who are really special to me, people who I'm close to, I don't do what I used to do. Prior to that, Christmas has always, from when I was a young girl, even though we celebrate Kwanzaa, my parents never, maybe the first few years of my life, they was doing the Santa thing, but we was out of that quick, totally out of the Santa piece. Because first of all, we lived in the projects.
Yeah. So ain't no Santa. My mother ain't no Santa Claus. I'm Santa Claus.
Exactly. So we got out of that. I don't remember. That was when I was like a little girl, but we ain't do Santa. But we did do gift giving because it, you know, all these holidays, I think we know the history of them, or you at least should be teaching the truth to your family members. And then saying that, as I say all the time, we all walk in contradictions because on one hand we can say we know, we understand the holidays, but it does give you time off from work, time to get together with family, time you could travel and different things that you can do, eat good food. And so I used to spend ridiculous money on Christmas gifts, and now I don't do that anymore. I just don't. Well, let me say it this way. I don't buy a lot of gifts, but I still buy quality gifts for individuals that I love. So I'm actually in my don't spend money period right now. However, I am going to support Black-owned businesses. What I did do last year, I started just picking people randomly from my Instagram comments and paying their rent. I paid, I think, like three or four people's rent last year, Christmas. And then a lot of my friends joined in and picked people as well. And I got that from Miss Miami Bling's page. Oh, Miss Bling Miami, her page, she was doing it. So then myself and another sister, I can't remember her name right now, we all just sort of picked it up and started doing that. So I probably would do that again this year. And then we, you know, have some other stuff coming up. So I'm going to purchase something from Actively Black, but I am trying to like hold on to my money during this season.
Yeah, got to hold on to that coin, man, because it's tough out here, man. We in a recession, money is... You know,
well, they say, are we really in a recession?
Well, I mean, you could just see that money is not going as long. Yeah, inflation is definitely, you know, money is definitely not going as far as it used to go. The dollar don't mean as much as it used to. So hold on to your coin. Definitely don't go out there and buy no Nike. Fuck Nike. Don't spend a dime on Nike. Fuck Nike.
Yeah, I'm like, things are really expensive. You know, I am fortunate that, you know, I have resources, I have the means, but I'm looking at things and I'm like, wow, this is really expensive. Like there's a lot of things, especially with flights. I'm like, usually I'm like, if I want to go somewhere, if I need to be somewhere, I'm out. Like there's no, you know, I'm going to pay for my flight and go. I also have points. I got different things, but I am even sitting back like, this is too expensive. And I'm definitely not just outright trying to buy first class tickets on most flights where I used to fly first class anytime I got on the plane. And you know that I definitely was like, I'm a purchase, but I don't do that. I think everybody has to cut back no matter how much money you have. And I was talking to a friend of mine who has lots of money, a lot of money. And she was like, even in our house, like with money, we're not spending like that. You know, we're being very, very careful about how we spend because money goes so fast that you got a lot today and you can have a little tonight, not even tomorrow. Not even
tomorrow, tonight.
Tonight.
It's tough out here, man. So me, my money go to everybody else. I think I'm like the bank. Everybody thinks I'm the bank. The couple of little fragments I get, you know, I don't get to enjoy nothing. But I don't really need much. To me, you know, I think with this whole Nike boycott thing, for me, it's made me detach because, you know, I'm a big sneaker person. Like, I love sneakers. And even though I'm still getting sneakers, but I don't feel attached to it, right? Because I used to have to go out and get the new Jordans and the new this and that when it came out. And now I don't. So it's making me feel like, yo, I don't really need none of this shit. So, you know, I'm being a lot more frugal. I'm just paying attention to money. I'm seeing myself save more money. You know, it's working for me.
Yeah, Mr. Footwork, who I saw today, shout out to Mr. Footwork. If you don't know him, if you're looking for any sneaker, period, you go to Mr. Footwork on Instagram. Footwork. And he will help you to find it. Not just sneakers, jackets, chains, anything that you want. Mr. Footwork is on his feet and about that business. So he is now looking for sneakers that have the purple that matches Until Freedom, but obviously not Nike. He's doing that work for us, that research, because I was like, bruh, I need sneakers with purple in it because I wear that with my Until Freedom gear. Anyway, a lot of little things, crazy things going on around this country. And I promise, I'm committed to some new things going into the new year. And one of them is, of course, on the finance side. Now I've gotten better with what I spend on and how I spend. Now I'm getting better on my paperwork, organizing myself and making sure that I have all of my documents and paperwork and all of that, and trying to get my taxes straightened out. I had several years of just taxes being crazy, but now I'm trying to tighten all the things. So that's my commitment to myself. But the other thing is what I'm eating, right? Like, eating out, dude, we gotta be massive careful. You already have changed your eating habits, but you will still get a piece of fish anywhere, like your little spots you be going to all around. And we have to be really careful, because part of our health is not just the food we eat, but the cleanliness of it. And so the last few weeks, I have been cooking meals in my house. Part of it is I want to cook for my family with my grandbaby and everybody together. But beyond that, even for myself, I cannot eat out at these restaurants every single meal of the day. It's just too much. Now, we saw in Detroit at Popeyes, all over the takeout orders, roaches was crawling everywhere. Well, roaches wasn't just on takeout orders. It was, they were in the straws. The DoorDash delivery person caught pictures or video or whatever of these roaches crawling everywhere. Now, cockroaches or the big water bug type of roaches, that's one thing. Those are nasty too, but you can have an infestation of them and not be dirty. So for instance, there was an infestation of the water bugs that came into my house. My house is not dirty at all, but the water bugs came in and they kept, you kept seeing them dead. And it was because there was water and a leak and a thing and whatever, and it had to be fixed and it got under control. But once one comes, you can see six or seven, because in our house, there was like 10 or 12 of them dead at the same time when I came back from a trip and I wasn't home. So that's an infestation, and that's nasty as hell, but it did not happen because of the house being nasty. It happened because there was water that they were able to feed on.
Yeah.
Roaches.
Roaches is different.
Roaches.
Yeah, they come for the disgust.
That's nasty. Yeah, it's nasty.
It's terrible. And the thing is, the way they multiply, the speed that they multiply. And once they get in, they lay eggs and they keep on laying eggs. And
yeah,
the Popeyes thing, and the thing was running out the little hole in the Popeyes box. It was disgusting, like disgusting.
And on some real, we be ordering stuff off Uber Eats. You don't even know what the restaurant looks like that you're ordering from. So you just going online looking for the best. And by the way, me, when I go to Uber Eats, I always go to the Department of Health for that state and look up the restaurant as well. Yo,
y'all don't know. Y'all listened to Tamika, but she is a dirt germaphobe. She cannot stand roaches, rats, dirt. She can't stand none of this stuff. It drives her crazy. She's calling the mayor about the rats. She's taking pictures wherever she sees. She is not for it at all. So these more every time these things come on, it drives her crazy. Now she's going to be like, I'm never going to Popeyes. No.
I don't even eat Popeyes no more after the rats was running up the wall. Popeyes, the only way I'm going to eat Popeyes is if I'm drinking. And if, they bring a box of chicken in the house, it's like, okay. But I'm getting to the point, Mice, where I will go to pick up something and just be like, I can't. I just can't eat it. I can't. I would rather go to a good Jamaican restaurant and get me some fried chicken out the when they be having it under the light. Now, I'm not even, and by the way, I don't even want to consider how clean some of those restaurants are either. So let's just be clear. But what I do know is in New York City, we have many, many, many cultural restaurants, and you can tell they are very clean. Like they are trying, they're trying their best anyway to keep it clean, especially like the Golden Krust brand and the ones that I've been to. I can see where they really are trying to do their job of keeping things clean. But anytime you eat out, you're taking a risk. So Popeyes in Detroit, I don't even know the number, you know, y'all can look it up. They have roaches. Now they've had to close their doors because they have roaches crawling over everything. It's bad enough. Some of them got rats. Probably they got rats and roaches. Do rats and roaches live in the same space? I don't know, but I am going.
Yes, they do. Oh yeah, they definitely coexist.
Or is it mice and roaches?
Both.
Because rats.
Mice and rats. They do the same. They all in the same places.
Well, no, rats and mice don't cohabitate.
Well, yeah, because rats eat mice.
Right. So they don't cohabitate. Anyway, I'm getting ready to join the New York City Task Force for rats and something that got to do with cleanliness. Speaking of nasty rats, something that needs to be, I want rats to be exterminated. And I also want individuals who prey on and rape young people or anybody, rapists in general, to be exterminated. And I really do mean that. Like, if you are out here sleeping with kids and messing with people and their children,
them babies, man, it's terrible.
They need to be put somewhere. They need to be
put them out of the misery.
I guess we can't really say put you down because we don't really support. I don't support the death penalty. So I do for
rape.
Yeah, I know, but it's like you can't have one thing and not the other because I don't know. I mean, it's a difficult thing. But the Archdiocese in Baltimore, I wonder if it was Maryland or Baltimore. It's probably Baltimore. It might have been Baltimore. Anyway, I know this happened in Baltimore, but it could have been the Archdiocese of Maryland. I don't know how that works. But anyway, they failed to report sexual assault against many victims. Now there's a criminal investigation that has uncovered 600 people saying that they were victims over 80 years. So over 80 years, there are at least 600 people who were young at the time, growing up in the church. And the Archdiocese, they claim they did their own investigation, and then they banned these priests and others. I'm sure it was priests, but there's maybe other members of the church leadership that were involved in this. They banned them from being around kids. Now, the only way you could be banned from being around kids is
because you did something.
Oh, but you could be locked up. You have to be away. You can't be told.
Just say, oh, you can't be around kids.
What are we talking about?
Hope you're going to stay away from them. So, now, I just don't understand why does this church constantly have this issue with these kids? Like, what is going on? Like, I just never understood. Like, what is it? Is it something that's part? Like, what is going on?
Well, and so a part of me is considering what it means to be a part of a village, right? And so if we were in an African village. And it should be the case even in our own communities. We don't call the police. We would not call the police to deal with our issues, yeah. Right? I mean, that's kind of the theory. But then what is the process? I need to hear it. I need the Pope himself or some damn body to tell me what is the process for multiple victims of sexual assault. If we're not using the criminal justice system, fine. I could even accept that there has to be a mechanism for public safety, community safety in your own village. We all need that, right? We need that. If you're a murderer, a dangerous person.
I mean, it's a sickness, right? So there has to be some level of something to address the sickness. I don't think it's just a crime. I think it's definitely a sickness, especially when you look at it, because a lot of them pray. They don't just do it one time or something like that. It's a sickness. It's a cycle. So I don't know. Like you said, I want to know what the process is of you addressing it, and you know, you doing something, because there's no accountability. Like, what are you really doing that you're holding these people accountable?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm trying to ask you. Is what
I don't have a clue. I don't know what it is they out here doing, because it ain't working. Because we keep hearing the same thing in the church, in this Catholic church, and I don't understand where it's coming from. I don't understand what it is that's something that's prevalent in those churches.
The question becomes: is it a sickness, or is it cultural? Or is it both?
I think it might be both, because we've seen this culture within the same church over and over again. It's been so. I don't understand, you know, is it something that's supposedly accepted within this church? Like, I don't understand.
Well, I think at some point it was. Like, we need to stop playing with this conversation.
Yeah, right? I don't know. That's what I've never really got into in depth with it and understood exactly why. You know, and why isn't it totally frowned upon, you know, and it's constantly happening within the church. So I don't understand. I've never got to understand. I just know it was crazy. And they always say, yeah, they said this person was doing this in the Catholic church. This person was doing this to kids. And we just keep hearing it. And it's like, it's not changing. This shit has 600 people, over 600.
600 victims, 115 abusers. And this all happened over 80 years. So this is going on for 80 years. So if the village dealt with 2, 3, 4, 5, and it keeps happening, at what point is it a systemic problem that has to be addressed on a larger level? I don't know.
I think it needs to be addressed on a high. I just think, like I said, rape to me is one of those crimes where it should be punishable. But I would say death if you're raping kids. But it has to be punishable by some level of incarceration, some level of, you know, punitive. It has to have punitive, you know. And when you're doing something and you're not treating like it's something to have a punitive, you know, response, then I think you're dropping the ball on it, and you're allowing it to foster and continue to grow because there's no real consequences.
I'm with you. I don't know. I don't have nothing else. This ain't right. That's all I could say, is that this is wrong. It is wrong. It's wrong. And I posted the story on my page or in my stories, and somebody wrote back to me like, oh, well, that never happened to me. Yeah. It's, you know what? I never, God knock on wood or whatever, and please God bless me. But I never got struck by lightning. That never happened to me. But there's other people that they were struck by lightning. So stop trying to make it seem like just because the priest in your church did not rape you or molest you or something, that means it didn't happen to, first of all, other people in your church, but also that it couldn't be maybe just not your priest. No, there is no 100% of anything. So we know that there's not 100% of priests that have had or abused children. So maybe it missed you, and God bless you that it missed you. And maybe you didn't even know what it looked like if it did happen to you. But nonetheless, there are many people that it has happened to. And this is crazy. So I really am trying to understand, for me, I'm trying to understand what is their process, because I don't get it. I don't get it. And they said, it's 115 priests, and they said they've been credibly accused. So we're not even saying like half, slashing in half, bring only 10% or 3% or 2%. We're talking about, they're saying that these people are credibly accusing individuals. And by the way, 43 more priests have been accused as well, but they didn't make it to the official 115 that have received some type of reprimand from the church. The reprimand ain't working. The reprimand ain't working. And I don't know, this might be going too far, because I would never sit here and say that the Muslims should, you know, not wear hijab. I think they should have choice, right? I would never say that the Christians shouldn't have baptism, right? I would never say that. These things are cultural parts of what makes up their religion and our religion. But maybe not having sex as a priest is not a good thing.
I don't think it's a natural thing. And I think, you know what I'm saying? I think sex is a part of life, and it's a process. I don't think telling priests to abstain is all the way realistic, you know, for the majority of them. The majority of people don't abstain from sex their whole life. It's not really a thing. So
but why do they go to kids?
Because those are the people that they're around.
Most vulnerable.
You know, they're around. They're trying to figure out what to do with this sexual energy. It's a lot. It's a lot to unpack. Make up some shit that'd be wrong, but it's definitely a lot to unpack.
It is. I mean, I need to learn more. And I'm not in the Catholic Church, but I went to Catholic school, and I need to understand, because anytime a bunch of kids is, no, it's not right. So anyway, speaking of abuse, attorney Ben Crump has our friend. He has filed a lawsuit against the Department of Corrections in New York because there are a number of women who claim that they have been impregnated by correction officers over several years. Impregnated, raped, you know, rape, basically, sexual
assault. Pretty much, because they don't have power to really, you know, when you exercise in power, they can't really say yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and some of them might have acted like they was cool with it. It helps them probably get some privileges.
But the thing is that it's illegal.
It's illegal.
It's automatically raped. Whenever a CEO or officer has sex with a prisoner, it's rape. There's no consensual sex in that situation. It's always rape.
So that's it. So the women are suing. Again, I know that one of the leading cases is around actually being impregnated by these officers. And, you know, what has the Department of Corrections done about that? There's so many things in our society that is just out of control. Like everything is just out of control. People just doing whatever the hell they want to do. And now you have this, you know, coming out, which we already know that the officers be having. I mean, I hope people don't think that some of these officers don't have sex with the incarcerated individuals.
It definitely is.
Yeah, it's happening. It's definitely
happening. Trust me, I know.
Just saying. So that's another thing going on. So last week I attended court, the Tory Lanez trial. I went because I wanted to. People asked me, why did I go? Like, why did you go? I said, two reasons. So what's the two reasons? Because I felt like it. And I can go anywhere I want, anytime I want. And so that's why I went. And two, I went because I wanted to see and hear for myself. I didn't want to, because of the fact, if the trial was playing on TV, or, you know, if there was actual clips and audio coming out from inside the courtroom, I probably would not have gone, not because I still wouldn't have wanted to be there, but I had so much going on. Like, I literally did not sleep all week because I was flying overnight to LA, going to the trial, then leaving the trial, having to fly out overnight again to get to Orlando for the Conference of National Black Churches. They had their conference going on, and I went there to present on a panel about addiction and mental health issues in the Black church. Then I left there, had to be in DC because we were honored by the National Coalition of Black Civic Participation and Melanie Campbell. So I was literally going crazy. So if I could watch it on TV, I would have, again, because it would have worked better for my schedule. But because that was not the case, and the only news I was hearing was coming from the Instagram reporters, I was like, I want to hear exactly what Megan says, word for word, myself, so that I can understand more about the nuances. And a lot of stuff was uncovered, you know, what we already discussed, the fact that a Nigel King interview, she said she didn't have sex with him. I didn't believe that. I didn't believe it. That's just the truth. And I, you know, I love and support Meg, but I didn't believe that. And she said she lied about it. You know, I know why. And when she said she didn't do it, I know why. I knew why she was doing that. You know, it's not an unusual thing, especially for women, even women and men, to try to deny someone they had sex with because they don't want their business. And I think one of the things about Megan that she's going to have to work on is feeling like she needs to present a certain way for the internet, you know, for what people are saying about you or what they think. At this point, it doesn't matter anymore. You know, we all have come to our own conclusions in our head, which is not court, about what we think happened, right? We've come to our own conclusions and it really doesn't matter. Like, you don't have to oh, I didn't do this and I didn't sleep with this one. It doesn't really matter. Like, F who don't like who you slept with. So what? It's better to just go ahead and be straightforward about whatever the issue is so you can just, you know, in this situation, I'm not saying anybody should just be out telling their business. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying when it comes to a situation that you have to deal with it in court and you got the court of public opinion, the court, the actual court is at that point trying to do the wiggle thing, it doesn't work. But it's still whether she slept with Tori, Pori, Poopy, and Toopy doesn't matter because it's going to come down to who shot her and what does the jury believe. And in listening, you know, and sitting there listening to her, and my thought of the day, what came to me as I was sitting and listening to the nuances and the details and what they brought up, everything she tweeted, everything she said, every interview she did, every Instagram post, every you know, all the whatever, everything, they have it and they bring it up. Sometimes it was brought up to support her, right? Because she has her story was very consistent about certain things, very consistent. And so they brought it up to say, this is what she said then, this is still what she's saying now. But they brought up inconsistencies. My thing is, you know, we have to be real careful what we do on social media. I tell you all the time, emotional response on socials, because we all get emotional. You, me, anybody, you get upset, something pisses you off, something makes you angry. Sometimes you want to kick somebody's ass. All of that stuff, those things, those are emotions and they happen to us. But Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and any form of social media is not the place to go to express that, because later on it will be used either against you, or sometimes it can work, but more than likely it is being used against you. And I think people just need to be real careful what they write and what they say, especially after they are triggered by something from an emotional perspective.
I mean, I definitely agree with that. And that's why it's called Instagram, because you instantly, you know, a lot of times I've had to just, you know, suspend your first reaction, right? A lot of times you see shit and you mad, you're like, yo, I want it. And you have to, and a lot of times what I do is I'll write some shit and just delete it because I wrote it. And you know, and it gives me some level of therapy. But yeah, definitely when you're looking, especially in this situation, that, you know, I think what's going on is, there's a court and then there's court of public opinion, mm-hmm. right? So, and people tie you into anything you say. You know what I'm saying? And no matter what you say, if anything that conflicts a little, they use that to try to destroy your character, anything. Oh, but you said this. They come on my page all day. Oh, how you gonna be this? But you said this. Well, you said this. Oh, this is contradicting. Oh, listen, your perception of what I say or what I do is your perception. You know what I'm saying? So people try to tie you in to something, the reason why you did it. Oh, you only did this because of that. Well, you know, and that's what social media does. And you find yourself trying to punch yourself out of a situation that you can't change people's perspective of you, right? You just, only thing you can do is be who you are, understand your understanding. And you can utilize social media as something that you promoting things, that sometimes you express thoughts that you think you know the world should, you know, before you express them, make sure that these thoughts are something that you know you want the whole world to know, right? That after the emotions is gone and all that shit, it doesn't come back to you. And you're like, damn, I should have never said that. Because a lot of, this is what I see a lot, is people that I've seen on Instagram say shit and be like, and I'll be like, wow, why would they say that on Instagram? You know, like, about their personal life and personal friends and this and that, you know? And I think, you know, for me, like I seen a post today, and it was about Twitch, and it was Little Romeo, and he said something, and you know, it was directed to his father. And I'm like, damn, I didn't know none of this was going on. You know, and he said, you know, it's sad when your father posts something, RIP to a famous person who's going through mental health, but stays away from your own family members who's dealing with the same thing. You know, y'all role models and this and that. And I was like, damn, like that wasn't for Instagram. That was some shit you call your father on the phone and be like, yo, dad, this is some sucker shit, boom, boom, boom. I'm feeling this way, like regardless of what, that's your father. Like we've watched that man give you opportunities to put you in the best positions of your life, and you don't have to deal with certain things based on that. I don't know what the full, you know, the full scope of your relationship is, but I just know that you talking to your father through Instagram, talking bad about your father through Instagram, like that shit don't go away, you know? And the shit that they use against both of y'all, that they'll use to pit you two against each other. And, you know, I just think that in those instances, we have to be very, very careful about how we use Instagram.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I feel that way about, I feel that way. I felt that way too. Like, you know, maybe he feels that his dad deserved it for some reason. You know, maybe he feels like his dad deserved it for some reason.
I mean, obviously he feels like, but I'm just saying.
I was gonna say, maybe he feels that way. And perhaps he does. Perhaps it's so bad that he does deserve it. But I personally believe he'll regret writing that on social media. It's just every day I'm learning of more and more people who are starting to pull back from social media because people are seeing the damage that it's causing. And I am one of those individuals that, in fact, I was just thinking like, damn, I have so many posts. Like we go to so many events, we doing this, we being honored, we over here, we over there. I have so much stuff going on. If I posted everything that I'm doing every day, people might be like, she's like crazy. Like this, something is wrong with the, not crazy, a bad word. You know, we're not supposed to say crazy, but you know, like they might look at me and be like, it's overkill, right? Because I literally have done in the last week or two, first of all, for the whole year, I've been working my ass off. I've been here, speaking here, doing this, doing that. I don't post not even half. A very small portion of my life is on social media. Matter of fact, they say, my private life is way more exciting than what people actually get to see. And I try to give as much as I can, but I realize one, I need to protect myself from vultures and haters and trolls. Because I find myself getting ready to tell somebody to suck. And I have to be careful about that because I know it's not appropriate. But then also, I just want to figure out like, who am I actually talking to? Because the friends that I want to see certain things, some of them are present when I'm enjoying these moments or experiencing whatever, the ups and the downs and highs and the lows. Then also, I could text them. I got group chats. It's like, why am I, everybody else doesn't need to see and be a part of everything you're doing all the time. And I know there are people out here that use social media and it benefits them to turn that camera on while they are doing whatever, cooking their foods, doing something with their kids, talking about inspiration. I know that, and I'm not taking anything away from those individuals, but I just hope that we're using, I hope people are using it properly and using it for a benefit, because otherwise it's way too, you regret some of the stuff you post. And I do. I regret some things that I have posted.
I think we all have. We regret things every day. We regret things we say. You know what I'm saying? We regret places we like. It's a lot of stuff we regret. I think as adults and responsible individuals, learning how to use social media to your advantage and not to let it something that consumes you and you wasting time is something different. But we definitely need to be able to utilize, because the amount of people that you're able to reach, you know, in such a short amount of time, you know, so rapidly, yeah, and the impact that it can have, right? Because as organizers, you know, as activists and leaders, we have to be able to be in tune with the large amount of people at one time to spread messages. You know, the work that we do is because people pay attention to what we say. So if we don't have, you know, platforms in which we can reach mass amount of peoples and organize and inform people everywhere, then it's hard. Our work becomes way harder.
It's true. It does. It does. So, you know, it is what it is, but, you know, just, we got to be careful. That's my thought of the day. Be careful on social media.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I never thought I'd take my three young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery, but that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. Join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily, as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which has morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian Mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
So, you know, in the spirit of giving, it's holiday time. I'm always, we've been doing this. We talked about it earlier, how we've been picking people online and trying to be supportive of folks. You clearly are doing so much to try to be supportive of Black businesses. I heard from one of the businesses that you have promoted that their sales are up crazy, especially during this holiday time. So it's all, I think we certainly reject the pagan side of these holidays. We reject the oppression of our people and other communities that has happened as a result of these holidays. That's all about supporting capitalism and not telling you the true story of like what has, you know, what atrocities occurred as a result of these holidays. But what we do want to always focus on is the spirit of giving. And this is our Christmas episode. And I learned of this story just scrolling on Instagram. You know, Instagram tells you what you're supposed to look at these days in case people don't know. I know I'm like so anti certain things on social media. So I'm going to try to ease up on that. But they do tell you what you're supposed to be looking at. And one day, I guess because so many of my friends were engaged on a particular post of our next guest, I was somehow, you know, it came up on my feed. I wasn't following her, but this particular day, I saw what looked like a young child in serious distress. Like the imagery of what I saw was disturbing. It was very, you know, it was pretty much a treatment situation. And you could tell the child was in the hospital and there was things happening to her that, you know, just broke my heart. So I started clicking through the page, her mother's page, checking out like what else is going on. And I saw previous pictures of her as this beautiful young lady, you know, a young, vibrant kid. And then of course, this complete, like all the way to the left difference of her being sick and in the hospital. And so I read up about it. I reached out to her mom to try to figure out, is there, you know, anything that we can do? And, you know, obviously they were in the hospital and dealing with a lot, but when she was released from the hospital and went home, I heard back from her mom saying, hey, you know, quite frankly, I need help. And so today we are in the spirit of giving, we are going to use street politicians as an opportunity to raise money for this family. After she tells her story, hopefully you, wherever you are, wherever you're sitting, you will feel compelled to give to help her. No, GoFundMe is not an insurance policy, but sometimes things happen outside of the scope of what our insurance can handle, what our bank accounts can handle. And we as a village and as a community, we have a responsibility to help our neighbor and our brother or sister, our siblings, the same way that we would want to be helped if we were in a similar situation. And I know I don't have to beg y'all or preach to y'all, because this story is one that if you know, when we give, because we see the police shot somebody down, we give millions of dollars. We give when we see people harmed, we give when we see compelling stories. This is a compelling story that we need to also support. And so I would like to welcome today. I don't know if maybe you wanted to say something first before we bring
it. No, I'm saying you're 100% right, man. We have to pay it forward. And when I heard about this situation, you know, it touched my heart, you know, and I felt for the family. And I think we should do all that we can to wrap our arms around her and her daughter, you know, and make sure that the village takes care of its own. So definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And so today I want to introduce you all. Some of you already know, because I see there's a lot of people following her, but a lot of you probably don't know. I want to introduce you all to Bailey's mother, the young lady in the young girl in the video. Her name is Bailey and she's 12 years old. And this is her mother, Nico Taylor. Thank you so much, Nico, for joining Street Politicians and just for being so dope and so humble. And we want to do all that we can to support you, sis.
Thank you guys so much. It's definitely been a huge struggle. I'm about to cry right now. I'm like, but yeah, it's been a struggle.
I know it's a lot, Nico. I know it's a lot, you know, just having, especially your daughter, it's a young girl, 12 years old. Dealing with what she's doing. So give us a kind of understanding of exactly what happened to Bailey.
So Bailey went swimming and so let's just rewind. So Bailey does really, really good in school. She gets like really good grades. She was in sports. Really family orientated. Just a spunky young child that, you know, it's just a child that's just living her little life. And we've never had no type of health issues in my family, besides my mother. But other than that, nobody else. So I don't know that it could have stemmed from actually like family. I don't think that at all. She went swimming in a summer program. She was in a summer program and she went swimming. And so she had been swimming with the summer program for about 3 weeks. Nothing was going on and it was just fine. One day she came home and she was like, Mom, she was like, I really don't feel good. And I'm like, okay. She was like, today I can't go to practice. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, well, let's just take it off. Let's just take a rest. Maybe we're doing too much or maybe it's just a lot on you. And so she's like, okay. So that night she has a fever. And I'm like, okay, like you're getting sick. Maybe you're going swimming too much. So I'm just trying to understand, but I'm trying to understand it on a level that I'm not even thinking that it's going to get this far. I mean, I never thought that it was going to be as serious as it was. So she is still having the fever. I'm trying to break it with medicine. I'm trying to break it with just different avenues to help her and hydrate her, but that's not working. So the next day, the fever is still here. And I'm like, okay, so she stays at home with dad and I go to work, but I'm like, kind of like, is the fever breaking? He's putting cold towels on her, giving her a bath and cold water. The fever is not breaking. So the next following day, she has a lump on her forehead and it's like in the middle of her forehead, but it's like a slight lump. And I'm like, oh my God, did you hit your head on something? Or what did you do? Like, how did you get this? And so she's just like, Mom, I do not feel this. She's like, the fever is still here. She's like, I have a massive headache. I'm like, okay. So I go to work. And while I'm at work, I can't even work because I'm just worried about her. So I get home and I'm like, Bailey, I'm like, are you sure you're okay? She's like, Mom, I feel really weak right now. She's like, I just can't take it. I'm like, okay, we're going to the hospital. So we go to before we even go to the hospital, I'm like, I'm going to take a nap. I'm like, you know, let me just like relax a little bit. I just had got home from work. So I'm like, okay, we're going to go to the hospital tonight in the middle of the night and we're going to figure out what's going on. So I take her in the middle of the night. Immediately when I take her, they take her right in. They're like doing, you know, just similar tests. They're doing the fever test. They're noticing how she's acting. They're seeing that she's like, you know, dizzy and stuff. So then after that, after they take her right in, she immediately gets a CAT scan. So they're like, if we see anything on a CAT scan, we're going to have to admit you to Children's Hospital. So I'm like, okay. And so the doctor comes back and he's like, we have to admit you tonight at Children's Hospital. He's like, there's something but I don't know what it is. She was like, well, we see something on the CAT scan. So I'm like, okay. So after that, we go to Children's Hospital and we get there in the middle of the night too. So it's like about 3-4 o'clock in the morning. And so we're in the emergency room. So they get us in there. Immediately, they put her on 5 different antibiotics. As soon as they put her on 5 different antibiotics, they get us into a room. As soon as they get us into a room, they're trying to stabilize the fever. The fever is so high that they think she's going to have a stroke. So they're just like going back and forth, pacing. They're trying their best at that particular time to just help. So after that, 2 days in, she starts having seizures. Now, the seizure is a mild seizure in the beginning, and they still don't know what's going on. They're just saying that it's a brain fungus, that, you know, the tests have come back from the cultures, and this is what we're hearing, or this is what we're seeing on the cultures. And this is what we're discussing with multiple doctors that are specialists. So I'm like, okay. So I'm like, a brain fungus, how could she get that? And I'm explaining to them that she went swimming and stuff. So after that, the fever is not breaking, and then the communication stops because they're kind of scared too. They don't know what's going on. They're like, we don't know what this is. We've never seen this before. So we're all in like a panic now. So the first seizure starts, and it's about like 5 minutes. We're in the room and I'm sitting in the window because they give you like a room, and you know, in the window, it's like where the parents can sit down or you could actually make it into a bed. So we're sitting in the window. And so, her dad gets up, my husband gets up, and he's like, you know, he's like, Bailey, he like, you know, you okay and stuff? And then she's not responding. So I'm just listening and I'm like, okay. I'm like, he's like, Nico, she's not saying nothing, but she's like in a dead stare. She's just like limp and she's just staring. So when I get up, I'm like, Bailey, I'm like, are you okay? I'm like, talk to me, talk to me. She's not talking. So after that,
take your time.
So then after that or whatever, she like, so the doctor comes in. And then after the doctor comes in, she's like, if she has another seizure, I'm going to put her on seizure medicine. I'm like, how could you put her on seizure medicine? You don't even know what's going on. So after that, me and the doctor kind of like discussing really quick. In the midst of us discussing, Bailey has another seizure. But this one is like about 10 minutes. So she's like, we have to put her on seizure medicine. I'm like, okay. So I'm feeling like I had no room to kind of do no research. I just had to listen. That's the only thing I could do. So after they put her on seizure medicine, I'm like, you know, what does this mean? Like, you know, what is this all about? And so she's like, we have to do more tests. We have to do more tests. She's like, I can't give you anything. I can't give you no information. So I'm like, okay. So I start researching. So I'm knowing that the seizure is coming from the brain being swollen and the brain having inflammation in there. But when they're saying that it's a brain fungus, they don't know where it's even at. They don't know if it's just in the middle. They don't know nothing because it's still early on. So I'm like, okay. So now I'm starting to do my own research. And so they have her own seizure meds. So they break the first one, which is Ativan and Keppra. So after they give her Ativan and Keppra.
Those are two medications, right?
Two medications that they give her. Mm-hmm. So after that, Bailey is out. I mean, she's like completely out, as in she just didn't have no, like she was just asleep. Like, but the medicine makes you go to sleep. So, you know, I just was still uneased about the situation. I just didn't know. So I had a conversation with Dad and I'm like, listen, I said, they don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on. And you don't know what's going on. So right now we're going to do some research. But when they come in here, we're going to be on the same page. Because I don't want them to tell you one thing, tell me one thing. We're going to be on the same page about this whole situation. So when they come back, Bailey's completely out. So it's like the next day. And so the next day, we're trying to like feed her. She's not eating. She's just, you know, obviously she has... she's just using the restroom, but she's not eating. And so they're getting nervous again because the fever is back now. So now the fever is back to like 109. So now we're back in the limbo with just trying to figure out what this is. So they're, you know, doing more tests, they're doing blood tests, They're doing all types of tests. Some of the blood tests is coming back, you know, really good. So some of their positivity is just relying on this test, on these tests that they're doing. So they do an MRI. So when they do an MRI, they're like, okay, you know what? We're going to have to put you guys into
intensive care unit.
Yeah, yes, yes, yes. So we go down there and we're in ICU. And so they're monitoring her. They're monitoring her. And while they're monitoring her, you know, it's just like they still just don't know what's going on. So now we're going into like, you know, just a time where it's going into days and Bailey is just knocked out. She's just sleeping. She's just on the medicine. I'm literally like trying to stuff like food in her mouth. She's just not eating. So they're really, really scared at this particular time. So in ICU, they're just watching us and stuff. Obviously they're doing more tests. So I'm communicating with them. I'm asking them questions. I'm, you know, just trying to see what's going on. And they don't really know. So at this particular time, I started recording the conversations because I don't know what's going on. And I'm like, listen, you know what? I'm going to be in a world full of trouble and I'm not going to know how to handle this whole situation. And I'm going to need to get some help, or I'm going to need some type of outside help. So I reached out to one of my friends. Her mother is, she's an LVN. So I reached out to her. And so she reaches out to another doctor. And so he's trying to explain to me, they need to do a spinal test. They need to do these amount of tests. So now I'm referring, I'm giving the doctors all the information that I have. So they're trying to do more tests, but they're saying like, no, we don't think that test will work. Okay, well, we could do this test, but we've done this test. So we're all kind of going back and forth about this. All along, Bailey's still having these seizures. So now the seizures have sped up to 45 minutes. So the next one that she has,
meaning that every 45 minutes she would have a seizure, or
no, they're daily, but it's like, let's say today she had a seizure, it would be 45 minutes. So now they have her on Keppra, they have her on Ativan, but they're overly medicating her. They're putting a lot of medication into her. So she's out. So now she has a seizure, and I've called my pastor, and I'm talking to my pastor. And my pastor is praying the whole entire time. She's just praying her behind off. Like, it was this really intense, like, so, but these seizures that she's now having is 2 hour long. They're 2 hours. Now they really can't break them to where they're overly medicating her. When I say that, I'm saying she's on Benpack, she's on Keppra, and she's on Keppra, Benpack, and she's on Ativan. But they're medicating her so much that she just falls asleep out of the seizure. So now they put in the EKGs on her head because now they need to monitor when these seizures are coming. Mm. So when they put these on her head, they still are not monitoring it like as fast, as rapid. And I'm not really sure why, because it's like, you know, I can see the monitor, they can see the monitor too. But it's like when a seizure happens, it's like almost out of their control. Like they just don't know.
Okay, wait, let me just, because you said a lot of things that I know I would have been beyond terrified. Terrified is not a good word. Like, that's not an adequate word to describe what I feel sitting here right now. And it's not even my situation. You know, wow. Whew. Wow. I don't know what it looks like. What does a 2 hour seizure look like?
So she doesn't have these seizures where she is, you know, shaking or showing a lot of emotion in the seizure. She doesn't have that. Bailey's having the seizure where the whole body is limp and she can hear you, but she can't say anything. So if you raise her hand is just dropping. If you talking to her, if you trying to shake her, she just can't say nothing. She's just like in a dance there, like just, she's just there. Like, she can hear, but she just, that's it. So when she wakes up out the seizure and you're asking her questions, all she can say is, I can hear you, but I cannot do anything. I don't even, I'm even asking her like, okay, do you feel when the seizure is about to happen? She's saying, no, like, mom, I just can hear you guys, but I can't do anything. So she's just there.
Wow, this is... So what's happening now? What stage, like, Have they got fully diagnosed it? Do they know exactly?
No, they haven't fully diagnosed her. I just found out yesterday that in order to go to another hospital, we have to find some insurance that can cover that hospital, because at the time we didn't have insurance. So I applied for insurance, and the insurance that we have is not, they're only contracted with this one children's hospital. So in order for me to get a second opinion, I only can go to them, which is, you know, obviously not something that is okay for us to do when we know that they don't know what's going on. Every paper that has come to the house has said something different. It was a paper that came in and it said like she had a potty pot tumor. I researched it, like 17 people in the world have this. The next paper that comes in is saying that she has a sinus infection. The next paperwork, it says no diagnosis. And the next one that comes in, it says brain infection. It's just like all this type of stuff, but they just don't know. The next one that's coming, it says brain bacteria. It's honestly all over the place. And we still don't know what Bailey has.
When I saw the tube in her forehead, what were they doing?
So she went through surgery and they cut the forehead to drain it, to drain from the brain. So they went in through her nostrils. And so I guess when they went in, because that's still unclear. So, but they're saying when they went in, they went inside, they cleaned out the forehead, and then they put the drain in there to drain out whatever else was in there. But it wasn't just right there. It's on the left side of her brain. It's in the middle of her brain. And it's on the left side of her brain, the middle of her brain. And then it's like in the, like on the sides of her brain, basically.
So you all are living your life, you and your husband and your daughter. You have a son too. You all are living regular lives. She's going to school, playing sports, doing all her activities. She starts swimming. Next thing you know, she gets this fungus, or something happens, what we believe is a fungus, or you believe is some kind of fungus or something like that. And then this nightmare occurs in just like a week's time, from day to day to day, getting worse and worse and worse and worse, to the point that she ended up in the hospital, again, to your point, with the blank stare, with her brain having to be drained, you know, with all of this stuff that's going on. So obviously expenses are mounting, because the insurance that you have, they don't have insurance anymore. It used to be that you get some really good insurance. It used to be that you get some really good insurance that would cover a lot of things. But today they're doing everything they can to say, well, we can't cover this and we can't cover that. And you're not able to work anymore at this point, right? While this is going on, you had to stop working.
Completely, yeah. So it happened in July. We're in December and I am trying to pick back up work. Bailey is homeschooled. She cannot be in school right now. So right now I'm trying to, but I just can't. So initially I'm a hairstylist. And so all the clients that I've had, and I'm not concerned that they have left or they have parted ways with me or anything, but it's just going to be hard to pick back up life in so many different aspects.
Well, you know, since July, you know, just listening to it, I don't, you know, being a father, I don't even know how I would deal with this. How was your husband taking this?
He was taking it extremely hard. He was crying with me. It's like we was yelling. It was so much going on that we just couldn't believe it. And it's like, we just never expected something like this. Like, honestly, like, I can't even tell you how we got to that, because I'm not gonna lie to you, it was death was on the line, it was letting us know. They was like, okay, listen, you know, it's out of our control, and you know, she might, you know, and I'm like, nah, like, I just kept thinking, like,
can't be,
she's gonna die, because she, like, she gonna leave this world because she went swimming.
So she was released from the hospital, which is a good thing.
Yes.
I saw your family was there.
Yeah.
How did you get to that point?
So Bailey started progressing. And so she started progressing. I started cooking in the hospital and stuff. And I started making natural foods. I just started doing a whole lot of research that could put everything, all the nutrients back in her body so that it could help fight the disease too. Instead of us just eating at the hospital, I was really trying different methods. So she really, really started progressing. I started giving her sea moss every day. I started a lot of great things that I still do for her today. She still has to eat a certain kind of way. She cannot just go out and be like, I'm just going to eat whatever. Like, no, you cannot, because her condition is still unknown. And I don't want to be in a situation where I'm just letting her get right back into life and then something kicks it back up, because we left with the infection in. So she still has the infection. Once she started progressing, you know, we spoke with the doctors and stuff, and they were like, okay, listen, we're going to, you know, release you guys. And, you know, if anything happens, you guys can come back. But, you know, like she had like a fever or anything. So when we got released, we had to go to a hotel because she couldn't be around no family, like nobody. So we were in a hotel for about a month since we had been released. So when we got released, that's what we had to do. After that, we just allowed like her immediate family to see her. She still hasn't had like contact with a lot of people. And it's not because I don't want her to, but I think mentally she cannot handle the conversation. I think mentally it's a lot on her. She's definitely expressed that to us. She still worries about like when she's in the hospital, she doesn't want to hear about it. So to avoid all of it, I just keep her really, really close. And that's the best thing we could do. But I do invite people to church. So I'm like, if you guys want to see her, you guys can come to church on Sunday or something. But we're not going to have like a welcome home party or anything like that, because this is such a serious situation that we can't risk her. So, I mean, anything could be a risk at this particular time. Mm-hmm. So we just keep her close. And when she's seen her family, that's her aunties, her grandmother and her uncle, and just her cousins that literally we live really close and we're close knitted as a family.
Well, you know, you're in my prayers. Bailey's in my prayers. The whole family's in my prayers. And hopefully we can do something, you know, amplify your voice and let the world know the situation. And hopefully, you know, the world will pour into and help you with these fees, and, you know, and she'll get back to where she should be, man. So I just want you to know that we here for you.
Thank you guys so much. Like, seriously, it's a struggle, and it's still a struggle. Yeah. And I just try to be strong as possible. Sometimes I'm always feeling like, dang, like, how do you stare strength in the face? Like, you just gotta you just gotta be strong. You just gotta figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, your strength is her strength. If you give up, she gives up. So
right.
Your strength is her strength. Dad's strength is her strength.
Yeah.
And I agree with my son. I know that there are you, and you didn't ask me to help you from a financial perspective. You said you wanted to look into what was happening at the hospital to see if you were, you know, if things were going right. You just wanted to have a support system of people to help you think through what is going on and make sure that all your legal options, your hospital options, you want to send her somewhere else, trying to get the insurance to cooperate. And then I started asking you about how you were financially surviving, and you were like, oh, that's not a good situation right now. Like it's hard, you know, your husband is working and he's trying to do what he's got to do. Right. Did you tell me that?
No. So during this whole time, he wasn't working either. So he was going to school for real estate. And so he eventually passed the test, but during the whole entire time, he was like trying to go, you know, like, let's say Bailey was having a good day. He's like, okay, I'm gonna try to schedule my test and I'm gonna try to take it. But he failed the test multiple times because of the pressure. So he recently just got the license, but it's still a struggle because they haven't even sent the license out or anything like that. So right now at this particular time is just as just figuring it out and trying to just wiggle through life, honestly.
Well, listen, man, we're going to do all we can to try to help you figure it out and just try to amplify. You know, I'm definitely going to donate and try to get everybody that I know to donate because this is serious, man.
Listen, listen, folks who are listening in, $5 is a lot. $5 is a lot. The GoFundMe information is in our bio at Street Politicians Pod. It's in my bio at Tamika D. Mallory. It is, you can see it here. We are going to share it as much as possible during this holiday season. You've heard the story, and I told you all, once you heard the story, there's no question to what this is. This is not, well, how did he get arrested? And well, what did she do? And it's none of those things where we're now questioning. The young baby got sick. Her parents have been doing all that they can to support her and to work through this. You and I know, and I understand that there are probably people out here who say, well, I would still have to go to work. You're lying. If your baby was in a situation like this, your life would probably be a complete disaster because it's impossible to just leave your child at the hospital and try to go focus on a job when your baby doesn't, if it's cancer and it's a certain kind, you've got leukemia, you've got this, you've got that, maybe you can figure it because at this point you have a regimen, you understand what's going on, you know what to look forward to, even though it's traumatizing. But in this situation, they don't even know. Y'all didn't even know anything. Don't know what's going on. Don't know how she got it. Don't know what, how it's going to
press. Excuse me. I don't mean to interrupt, but I want to bring light to this too. I want people to do a lot of research when your child is in the situation or yourself is in the situation or your family or your husband or your grandmother, because they tried to force surgery on us multiple times. And when I say they try to force it, I'm saying in a sense that some surgeries are meant, you have to have them. So I understand that. But in this particular situation, if you do not know what's going on, the doctors cannot tell you what's going on, please do not just listen to what the situation may look like, because it definitely was an ugly situation. And for them, they felt like if we do this surgery right now, they wanted to cut my daughter ear to ear, pull down her skin, saw down the brain, saw down the skull, open up the skull just to rinse her brain off. My daughter would have had way more complications than what we discussing today. It had I been in there, been a young parent, and said, you know what? Okay, fine. They say surgery right now. We have to do it right now. No, I want people to do research. I want people to understand that, yes, the situation may look ugly. It may not look to your liking, but if you do a little bit of research and you actually try your best to get some second opinions, please do that. Please do not just allow yourself to be in a situation and just make an impulsive decision. I do want to bring light to that.
Yeah. Well, also, when you are afraid, when you're afraid and you think you are not an expert, you don't know, right? And you think other people have to know better than you, you will listen to what you're being told. Sometimes it's a gamble. You might need to listen, but to your point, you have to do research. And eating well, eating better is what we're learning, especially as African people, because we forget that we are African people. We are not, we have been Americanized, but we come from a place where, as my son and I, we talk about all the time, while we were in Ghana, we learned that every single thing you need to survive, every illness you have, every ailment, problem, there is literal things off the ground that you can take that helps to heal those things. So
I always say that. That's so crazy. I always say that.
We learned, everything, anesthesia in the plant. Everything you need, it was right there. And with that being said, we're going to let you go. But again, I just want to make the appeal that to deal with this situation is, it's going to take support. And we as a village need to be here. Of course, I'm going to give my own resources. This is my holiday focus. And I'm asking all of you, $5, $2, $10. As my son always says, all you have is all we need. So if all you got is $10 that you can offer to this family, please, please, please click the link, give and support Baby Bailey, 12 years old. She's doing better, but she's not out of the woods and still needs help. She still has infection in her body and she still needs to get to a different hospital, which we need to work on. But beyond that, her family needs food, water, just like all of the rest of us. Whatever we can do to be helpful, I'm asking you as a personal, not favor to me, but as a personal solidarity moment with us, my son and me and street politicians and our entire family, please support Bailey through her mom and her dad. We want you to be made whole, Nico, in any way that we can.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, the story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
I never thought I'd take my 3 young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery, but that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. Join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily, as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which has morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, man, that was touching. I've seen the video and heard the story, but hearing Nico break that down and just describe how it just went from zero to 100. One day, her daughter was fine, healthy, jovial young child, and then next thing you know, she's just in the hospital with tumors and having seizures. Like, I don't even know how you deal with something like that. It wasn't like a gradual, it just was like boom, boom, boom. That must have been the trauma and the stress that as a parent, being a parent, knowing that you can't do something to help your child, because that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to take care of your children and you're supposed to be able to help them. You're supposed to have the answers. And watching your child suffer to that degree and not being able to help them must be the most stressful and most traumatizing thing you can actually ever deal with. Because I know my son has a little fever and, just watching him and his little sickness, it gives me this feeling like I'm helpless. So that must have been watching your daughter have a 2-hour seizure. Mm. Like, Lord have mercy. I don't even know, man. But they're in my prayers. And once again, anybody, please reach out to them. Help them. She needs resources. She wants to be a help. She wants to help. She wants knowledge. She wants to give knowledge. So please.
Yeah, she wants to help people. She's starting a podcast now. We didn't have a chance to get into more of their personal story. I think we ought to bring them back, one, to acknowledge those people who have supported, because I know everybody is going to do it. Mm-hmm. But, beyond that, oh, God, like you said, I can't imagine. Out of nowhere. If you find out your child has a sickness and then there's a process. But this right here, it's crazy. And I know they probably, I saw where she was holding back from saying that they were coming to them saying it's possible she's not going to make it. That's tough. It's really tough. So we should have her back to talk about some of the things that they're doing. But she is building a podcast with her husband where they're going to talk about the experience, what the research looked like, what the natural foods have done, on and on. So that's great. It's great that we can continue on their journey with them. But thank God, Bailey is home.
Yes, thank God, and she's doing a lot better, man. So on another note, my I don't get it today is on a lighter note than that, but it's still serious. Last week, sometimes, Gunna was released from prison.
He was in jail, right?
Yeah, he was in a holding facility. So yeah, he's not actually in prison. He was released from jail because he's still fighting his case. So he was released from jail the other day, excuse me. And immediately when he was released, he put out a statement and said, "I did not make a statement against anything. I did not make any statements at all. So this, that, and third." 5 minutes later, they had a video of him giving the state. So I'm so confused. Now, being from the streets, knowing some legalities, understanding criminal law, understanding. And it's a lot of people throwing out the term rat and snitch and all that. So I don't know. I don't actually know, you know, the details of all of their cases. They might, there might be a situation where they've all decided, okay, mm-hmm. you take this, I'm going to take this, we're going to do this. That might be something that's happened, mm-hmm. right? So I can't say that the man snitched. I don't know what the, you know, what their agreement is. But what I do know is when you make a statement, because what they wanted to do with YSL is classify it as a gang, right? It was always been a hip hop and a group that they use for rap, but they wanted to classify it as a gang. And knowing that Young Thug is facing, you know, a RICO, which is serious, you know, that has everything for racketeering and murder, everything. If his right hand person that's with him saying that he acknowledges is a gang, right? And then there's, they found a car with a gun and all that. And he acknowledges that it's not his. He says that it wasn't his. There's only one other person in the car. So I don't know if
he's sure of that. Because that was a question earlier. I saw people saying, was there one person in the car or was there more?
Well, I don't. Well, the thing is this.
Or were there more?
Were there more? Well, the thing is, once you eliminate, whatever it is, once you eliminate.
It ain't yourself, you. You eliminate yourself. You.
So somebody else. You make it seem like they got to narrow it down to whoever it is. And you take yourself out. And it's a lot easier to prove the less people that we're trying to put one gun on. Right. If nobody's taking a case, they can't put it on anybody. So that makes it a lot harder. I know from a perspective, if I'm not copping out and I don't plan to cop out and I'm fighting these things, I understand that with the statement that was made is not in the best interest of Young Thug. I know that for a fact. Unless Young Thug might feel like, fuck it, it's too much. I'm dealing with this. I don't want you to do this. You take this. You can just say what you want. I'm going to take this. I'm going to hold on to that. And that might be the agreement. But I'm definitely, that is definitely a statement. And the government can definitely utilize that statement to piece together and pretty much identify and determine that this is a gang. And if they can determine this is a gang and Young Thug was the leader of that gang, then that's where they get the RICO charge. So I don't know. I mean, I just didn't really get what he for him to come out and say, I didn't make a statement. And then 5 minutes later, all over the internet, there's a statement. It just didn't make sense at all to me. So
I went and I did some reading on this because I saw a lot of people talking about it. And, you know, I've been interested in this case since the beginning, but I don't know enough. So I have to be, you know, be careful because I don't really know. Right. And so I've listened and I've heard people and I've watched folks saying free Gunna, free Gunna, free Gunna. And I've watched people say free Gunna who never said free Young Thug. So that also to me is a sign of something. I don't know what it means. Again, not that close to it. But I do know that today Young Thug's sister posted a video where she says, y'all please stop calling that man a rat or a snitch. None of this is making it any better for my brother. So the snitching part, like that in and of itself creates a whole bunch of other issues, like him being classified in that way. But beyond that, to your point, the statement that he made, it definitely incriminates YSL as a gang, period, point blank. That's right. I think that you, and we don't know shit because we ain't talked to these people, we don't know them or anything, but I think you're right. And I was talking to some of our other friends who are a little closer to the situation. And they said, it seems like there's an agreement. And the agreement was, I don't see any situation or any circumstance where Young Thug is going to be cleared of all the charges. Because by the way, even Gunna has not been cleared of all the charges. He still had to eat something, right? So he's going to have these charges on him. So I don't see a situation where he's going to be, Young Thug will be free of all charges. How bad it can get, whatever, we'll see. But this statement certainly classifies it as a gang. And to be quite honest, I think that they probably knew this already. right?
I don't know. I cannot confirm nor deny. You know what I'm saying? Right. I don't know anything about the agreement. I don't know what's known. I haven't seen their paperwork. I haven't seen an indictment. I don't know any of these things. But I know my understanding, being incarcerated before, you know, dealing with jailhouse lawyers and actually studying law, trying to figure out my own appeals and all of these things, I understand about statements. I understand how the government utilizes something to connect. You know, they're able to say, okay, we got to find a way to make this a gang. If nobody don't say it's a gang, they can keep saying that it's just a hip hop group, and it's never been, you know, identified as a gang. Nobody has given clear indication to say, yes, it's a gang. Mm. That's the first step to establishing a RICO. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the first step to being able to establish that it's a RICO. So, you know, we just got to see what happens.
I'm gonna see how it all plays out.
I don't use the term snitch unless I know, you know, right. Unless paperwork, we watch you sit up there and tell somebody, you know, and the other person has to identify and say, yeah, that wasn't part of our agreement. You know, because a lot of times, sometimes you eat the charge. You be like, yo, nah, I'm going to take that because that's mine. You know, that's my
right. I already know
what it is.
But so I got to deal with it.
We got to see what that is. So,
right. You know, and I did see someone say that, like, there was some legal experts talking about how you have to admit to something. So it seems like they figured out what that admittance is. And he's saying that he doesn't intend to go to court to say, like, oh, I saw him with a gun and I saw this one kill this one and that one. The question also, things are, you got to really be very, your discernment has to be very, very good. Because they ask, are you aware of crimes that have been committed by YSL members? And he says, yes. Well, of course, yes. Because there are other people who probably have been arrested and convicted of shit that was associated with YSL. That does not mean that he is saying that Young Thug did something or that he's about to tell of new crimes or crimes that have not been confirmed and people haven't been indicted and convicted of. But it's like saying, do I know that in my family, people have committed crimes? Yeah.
I ain't telling you who it is, though. I ain't saying it was Uncle Tommy because people.
Well, maybe Uncle. I might be able to say it was Uncle Tommy.
Because Uncle Tommy already took your child. Uncle
Tommy in jail. Yeah. Exactly. You already know Uncle Tommy shot Leroy. We know about it already. So, you know, discernment. But hey, we'll see. We'll see.
We definitely got to see. Well, that wraps up another show. Prayers go out to Bailey.
Yeah, healing energy to Bailey and her family.
And her family. Nico and the father. We didn't even get the father's name, but we send all our prayers out to that family and healing energy. Make sure that y'all donate to their GoFundMe because they definitely need those resources. Bailey she's doing a lot better, but she's not all the way out the woods, and she needs a specialist to really identify what's going on with her. So that brings us to the end of our Christmas episode. Mm-hmm. You know, Krimmel, I don't really celebrate Krimmel, but it's a Krimmel episode. So you enjoy your holidays with your family. We appreciate you for making us the number one podcast in the world. Yes, that's what we said, number one in the world, number one, street politicians. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to always be right. Tamika D. Mallory is not going to always be wrong, but we will both always, and I mean always, always, always be authentic.
Peace.
Listen to Street Politicians on the Black Effect Network on iHeartRadio.
And catch us every single Wednesday for the video version of Street Politicians on iWomen.tv.
That's how we own it!
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I used to have so many men.
how this beguiling woman in her 50s,
she looked like $1 million,
scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.